All right, so today we're going to be tackling a pretty big topic, FDA compliance for injection molding companies.
Right.
We've got some great excerpts here from this text called "How Do Injection Molding Companies Achieve FDA Compliance?" And we're going to try to kind of extract the need-to-know info for you.
Yeah.
So by the end of this, you should be able to not only grasp the essentials,
right,
but also maybe have some, real-world insights to apply.
Yeah, and I think, the source does a great job of kind of breaking down what could be a very intimidating topic for a lot of people. So, kudos to them for doing that.
Yeah, they start off by acknowledging that feeling of being overwhelmed. Like you're looking at this massive, regulatory mountain,
Right.
and
Where do you even begin?
where do you begin? Right. But it emphasizes that once you kind of break it down into the steps, like the materials, the processes, the equipment, the environment, the documentation,
Yeah.
it becomes much more manageable.
I think it's all about understanding kind of the interconnectedness of all those elements.
Okay.
You can't have, a perfect facility, perfectly calibrated equipment, but then the raw materials are completely subpar,
Right.
and then you're going to hit a wall.
Right.
So,
Speaking of raw materials,
yeah.
the source really digs into the importance of supplier selection. And it's not just about finding the cheapest option, right?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's like you're choosing the foundation for a house you need to get, quality materials that meet very specific standards.
And they really highlight the importance of working with certified suppliers who can provide documentation that demonstrates compliance with, regulations like 21 CFR 177 for food additives or ISO 13485 for medical devices.
So you're having that peace of mind knowing that the people you're working with
Right.
are already aligned with those expectations.
And I found it interesting they compare raw material inspection to like detective work. What are some of the things that they're looking for?
Well, they're really looking for anything that could compromise the safety or the effectiveness of that final product. So, things like contaminants,
Okay.
inconsistencies in the materials, composition or even degradation that might have happened during storage or transportation.
Got it.
And they're using some, pretty sophisticated techniques these days, like FTIR,
Right.
which is basically analyzing the material's molecular structure
Wow.
to, see if there's any red
So
flags.
it's not just about checking a box, it's about really scrutinizing every detail.
Absolutely.
The source then moves on to production processes, and they compare optimizing those processes to solving a puzzle. Where do you even begin with that?
Well, the foundation really is a robust quality management system, or QMS.
Okay.
And this is where things like document control process audits and corrective action procedures come into play. It's about ensuring that every step of the production process is meticulously documented, regularly reviewed, and continuously improved.
And I imagine employee training is a big part of that as well.
Huge, absolutely. You can have, all the procedures in the world,
Right.
but if the people on the ground aren't following them,
Yeah.
It's all for
It's
nothing.
all pointless,
Right,
as I
exact.
think. And the source also mentions, with the increasing role of technology in managing these complex processes, we're talking like AI-powered systems
Right.
that can, analyze data in real time to predict potential compliance breaches.
Yeah, prevent things before they even happen, which is
Wow.
pretty amazing.
And they even talk about like IoT sensors that can monitor environmental conditions.
Right. So temperature, humidity, all that stuff in the production areas.
So it's like a futuristic control room
It
where
is.
they're constantly monitoring every aspect of the operation.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
But even with all that tech, they still stress the importance of good old-fashioned audits. What's the value there?
Well, audits are really crucial for identifying areas where maybe the system is falling short. So, internal audits conducted by the company itself, those provide a regular checkup.
Okay.
External audits conducted by, independent experts,
Right.
those bring a fresh perspective and can uncover blind spots that internal teams might miss.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's a really valuable way to ensure that compliance isn't just a static checklist.
Right.
It's a dynamic process of continuous improvement.
And one thing that stood out to me was the emphasis on quality testing. And it's easy to get caught up in the procedures and the documentation, but ultimately it's the quality of the final product
Is
that
it the
matters most.
quality testing is the safety net that
Okay.
ensures what you're producing meets those stringent FDA standards.
And what are some of the different types of quality testing?
So you've got material testing to make sure the raw materials are up to par. Process control to monitor critical parameters like temperature and pressure throughout production.
Got it.
And then finished product testing to verify that, you know, the final product meets all the required specs.
So it's like a multi-layered approach to quality assurance, catching potential issues at every stage.
Absolutely.
And I was also struck by the source's focus on documentation.
Yeah.
They even compare meticulous record keeping to retracing your steps after losing your keys.
Right.
Like, how important is that?
Well, think of it this way. If a problem arises with a particular batch of product, you need to be able to trace its entire journey from raw materials to finished goods.
Wow.
And that level of traceability is only possible with comprehensive documentation.
So it's about accountability.
Absolutely.
Transparency. Being able to demonstrate that every step has been followed. Every detail has been recorded.
And in the event of an issue, that detailed documentation can mean the difference between, you know, a targeted recall of a specific batch versus a much larger and more costly recall of an entire product line.
That makes a lot of sense. But I imagine managing all that paperwork can feel pretty overwhelming.
It can.
What are some of the strategies companies use to keep it all organized and accessible?
Well, that's where good documentation practices, or GDP, comes in.
Okay.
And it's all about ensuring what we call data integrity, making sure records are accurate, legible, attributable, and readily available when needed.
Okay.
And the source specifically mentions, you know, the increasing use of electronic databases and systems these days, which really streamlines the documentation process and makes information retrieval a lot easier.
It's like having a centralized command center.
It is.
For all your compliance data.
Pretty much, yeah.
But even with these digital tools, the sheer volume of information must be staggering. What are some of the key types of records that companies need to maintain?
Well, you've got your raw material logs detailing the origin and the certifications of every material used.
Got it.
Then you've got detailed records of the production process itself. So think batch numbers, production dates, equipment used, even the operators involved.
Wow.
And then, of course, you have your quality testing records documenting the results of every test performed on the materials, in-process samples, and finished product.
So it's like building a detailed history.
It is.
For every single item that comes off the production line.
It's pretty amazing.
That's incredible.
And that history is essential not just for compliance, but also for traceability.
Okay.
You know, if a problem arises, you can pinpoint exactly when and where it occurred, which is crucial for, you know, containing the issue and preventing it from happening again.
So this is all starting to paint a really clear picture of how these systems work together. To ensure compliance, but we've only just scratched the surface.
We have.
What's next on our journey
into
this fascinating world?
Well, so far we've really focused on the internal mechanisms of compliance.
Okay.
In the next part, we'll explore how these systems interact with the FDA itself.
Okay.
Including the role of inspections and audits
in
ensuring ongoing compliance.
Sounds like it's about to get even more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Let's take a quick break. And come back ready to delve deeper into the world of FDA compliance.
Sounds good. So before the break, we were talking about, you know, documentation, tracking every step, almost like building a history.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how much information they actually capture for each, you know, for each product.
It is.
I would imagine if you weren't using, like, digital systems, it would be a total nightmare to manage.
Oh, absolutely. And the source actually dives into how technology is kind of changing the game for FDA compliance, especially when it comes to documentation and traceability.
They specifically mention 21 CFR Part 11.
Right.
Which sounds like a whole other level of complexity. What's the deal with that?
So 21 CFR Part 11 is all about electronic records and signatures.
Okay.
It's basically the FDA's way of making sure that digital documents are just as trustworthy and reliable as their paper counterparts.
This is like setting the ground rules.
It is.
For the digital age of compliance.
Exactly.
What are some of the key requirements?
Well, one of the big ones is electronic signatures.
Okay.
So these systems have to be designed in a way that prevents unauthorized access.
Right.
And ensures that any changes that are made to a record are properly documented and tracked.
Okay.
Then there's the whole issue of audit trails.
Uh-huh.
Every action taken within these electronic systems
right.
needs to be logged and timestamped so you have a clear history
wow.
of who did what and when.
So it's like having a digital fingerprint.
It is.
For every interaction with these critical records.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
And to make sure these systems are up to snuff, companies have to validate them.
Right.
Which I guess is basically proving to the FDA
yeah.
that their software and systems hmm. are secure, reliable, and meet all the requirements of 21 CFR Part 11.
Exactly.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to base your whole compliance program
right.
on a system that's, you know, prone to errors or security breaches.
Absolutely. And it's not just about the technology itself. The source also emphasizes the importance of having clear procedures for how these systems are used,
right.
how data is backed up,
uh-huh.
and even what happens if there's a system failure.
So it's like having a digital disaster preparedness plan.
It is.
Wow.
It's about minimizing risk and making sure those electronic records are always protected and accessible.
And speaking of preparedness,
yeah.
one area the source really emphasizes is the importance of having a robust system
uh-huh.
for handling deviations.
Right.
Because you know, no matter how perfect your procedures are,
yeah.
things are going to go wrong from time to time.
Yeah, absolutely. Things happen.
Right. And I imagine that can be pretty stressful.
It can be.
In such a highly regulated environment.
Yeah.
How do companies even approach, you know, dealing with these deviations?
The key is having a really systematic approach
yeah.
that focuses on identifying the root cause of the problem
uh-huh.
and taking corrective actions to prevent it from happening again.
So it's not just about fixing the immediate issue.
Right.
It's yeah. about learning from it.
Yeah.
And making the system stronger.
Exactly.
What does that process typically look like?
Well, the first step is to thoroughly document the deviation.
Okay.
So what happened, when it happened, who was involved, and any immediate actions that were taken.
Okay.
Then they launch an investigation to determine the root cause.
Okay.
So that might involve, you know, analyzing process data, mm-hmm. interviewing personnel, reviewing batch records.
Wow.
And really trying to piece together that chain of events.
So it sounds like a mix of detective work and scientific analysis.
It is. It's pretty interesting. And once they've identified that root cause,
uh-huh.
then they develop what's called a KP plan.
A KP plan.
Yeah. It stands for corrective and preventative actions.
Okay.
So it's really a two-pronged approach.
So what kind of actions might be included?
Yeah.
In a KP plan.
Well, it really depends on the nature of the deviation.
Okay.
You know, it could involve retraining employees on proper procedures, mm-hmm. updating documentation, recalibrating equipment,
right.
maybe even modifying a process or implementing new quality control checks.
Got it.
The goal is to address both the immediate issue
Cut.
And the underlying factors Cut, yeah. that contributed to it.
So it's like fixing the problem and preventing it from rearing its ugly head again.
Exactly. And once the KPA plan is implemented, they don't just stop there.
Right.
They monitor the situation to make sure the actions taken have been effective.
Okay.
And that the risk of recurrence has been minimized.
So it's like a continuous loop of improvement.
Yes.
Constantly refining the system
yeah.
to make it more robust and reliable.
That's the goal.
But it's not just about the systems and the procedures, right?
Right.
The source also highlights the importance of building what they call a culture of compliance.
Okay.
Within the organization.
That makes sense because you can have the most sophisticated systems in the world.
Uh-huh.
But if the people using them aren't on board,
right.
it's all for nothing.
Exactly. It starts with leadership setting the tone from the top.
Okay.
Making it clear that compliance is a core value,
mm-hmm.
not just a box to be checked.
Right.
But it also involves empowering employees at all levels.
Okay.
To, you know, raise concerns, report potential issues, and contribute to continuous improvement.
So it's about creating an environment where everyone feels responsible
Exactly.
for upholding those high standards.
Yeah, and that includes providing ongoing training and education,
okay.
not just on the technical aspects of compliance,
right.
but also on the ethical considerations.
So it's about creating that shared understanding of why these regulations exist.
Yeah, and how they ultimately benefit everyone.
Right.
The company, the employees,
uh-huh.
consumers who use their products.
Absolutely. It's a win-win for everybody.
So it's about moving beyond a culture of fear and blame.
Right.
And fostering a culture of shared responsibility
yeah.
and continuous improvement.
Exactly. And when you have that kind of culture in place,
uh-huh.
compliance becomes less of a burden and more of a source of pride.
Interesting.
It becomes a testament to the company's commitment to quality and safety.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the systems, the procedures, the technology, the culture.
Yeah.
But what about the FDA itself?
Right.
How do they interact with these companies to ensure compliance?
That's a great question. So the FDA has a variety of tools at its disposal.
Okay.
But one of the most important is inspections.
So they actually send inspectors out to these facilities.
They do.
To see things firsthand. What are they looking for when they do that?
Well, they're looking to verify that the company is following all the applicable regulations.
Okay.
And that their systems and procedures are actually working as intended.
Got it.
So they might, you know, review documentation,
right.
observe production processes, interview employees,
right.
even collect samples for testing.
It sounds pretty intense.
It can be, yeah.
What happens if they find problems during an inspection?
Well, it really depends on the nature and severity of the issues.
Okay.
Sometimes might be as simple as issuing a warning letter.
Okay.
Which basically outlines the problems and requires the company to take corrective actions.
And if the problems are more serious,
then they might issue what's called a Form 483.
A Form 483.
Which is a more formal document outlining observations that might constitute violations of FDA regulations.
So it's like a step up.
It is.
In terms of severity.
Yep.
What happens after a company receives a Form 43?
Well, they have to respond to the FDA, addressing each observation and outlining the steps they're taking to correct the problems.
Okay.
It's a chance for them to demonstrate that they're taking the issue seriously.
Right.
And that they're committed to coming back into compliance.
And I imagine those responses are scrutinized pretty closely.
They are. The FDA wants to see evidence that the company really understands the issue.
Right.
That they've identified the root cause and that they're implementing effective corrective and preventative actions.
And if they're not satisfied with the company's response,
then the FDA might escalate the situation.
Okay.
And take more serious enforcement actions.
What kind of actions are we talking about here?
Well, it could range from product seizures.
Okay.
Where the FDA physically removes the product from the market.
Wow.
To injunctions, which legally prohibit the company from manufacturing or distributing the product.
Got it.
Until the problems are resolved.
So these are pretty significant consequences.
They are.
Wow.
And in the most serious cases, the FDA can even pursue criminal charges against individuals or companies that knowingly violate regulations.
So the stakes are pretty high.
They are. But, you know, the vast majority of interactions between the FDA and injection molding companies don't involve these kinds of enforcement actions.
Okay.
Most companies are really striving to do the right thing.
Right. It's in their best interest.
It is.
To maintain a good relationship with the FDA.
A strong compliance program not only reduces the risk of enforcement actions,
right.
but it also helps build trust with customers, suppliers, and investors.
So it's about more than just avoiding penalties.
It is.
It's about building a reputation for quality and reliability.
Exactly. And ultimately, it's about recognizing that FDA compliance is not just a cost of doing business.
Right.
It's an investment
yeah.
in the long-term success of the company.
Okay. This has been incredibly insightful.
It has.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive.
Yeah.
From the intricacies of material selection.
Right.
To the complexities of documentation and traceability. And even the role of audits and inspections.
We've explored how technology is really transforming the landscape of compliance.
It is.
Creating new opportunities for efficiency, transparency, and continuous improvement.
But there's one more piece of this puzzle.
Yeah.
That I'm really curious about.
Okay.
What happens when things go wrong?
Right.
Even with all these systems and safeguards in place.
Yeah, that's where things get really interesting.
Yeah.
And that's exactly where we'll pick up in the final part of our deep dive.
Okay.
We'll explore the world of recalls, warning letters, and the FDA's enforcement process.
I can't wait to hear more.
Okay.
Let's jump right into that.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about all these systems that companies have in place to make sure they're following the rules.
Right.
But what happens when those systems fail?
Yeah, that's a really important question. And
like in the real world, it happens, right?
It does. It does. Things happen. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes those failures can lead to products that are, you know, unsafe or ineffective.
And that's where the FDA steps in.
Exactly. They have a responsibility to protect public health.
So let's talk about those moments when things go wrong.
Okay.
Why might an injection molding company find themselves in trouble with the FDA?
Well, it could be a whole range of things. Sometimes it's a problem with the raw materials.
Okay.
Maybe a supplier isn't meeting the standards, or there's been contamination somewhere along the line.
So that careful supplier selection process we talked about,
yeah,
really important.
It is. It can make all the difference, but sometimes the problems happen during the production process itself.
Okay.
You know, maybe there's a deviation from the procedures, a piece of equipment malfunctions, or there's a communication breakdown.
And I imagine those detailed records we talked about become pretty crucial.
Oh, absolutely. The FDA is going to want to know exactly what happened, when it happened,
right,
and what steps were taken to address the issue.
So it's like piecing together a puzzle.
It is.
Using those records to trace the problem back to its source.
Exactly. And sometimes those problems don't even surface until after the product is out in the world.
Oh, wow.
Maybe a customer reports an issue, or a routine check uncovers a defect, or there's a pattern of problems reported to the FDA.
So then that traceability system we talked about is really important.
It's essential, being able to track that specific batch back to where it came from.
So let's say the FDA does find a problem.
Okay.
What do they do?
Well, it depends on how serious the problem is. Sometimes it might be a warning letter.
Okay.
Basically outlining the problem and telling the company to fix it.
And if it's more serious?
Then they might issue what's called a Form 483.
A Form 483?
Yeah, it's a more formal document that says, hey, we found these things that might be violations.
It's a little more serious.
Yeah, and the company has to respond to that.
Okay.
Address each point and explain how they're going to fix things.
So they have a chance to explain themselves.
Right. It's their opportunity to show they're taking it seriously and they're committed to getting back on track.
And if the FDA isn't happy with that response?
Then they might take more serious action.
Like what?
It could be product seizures where they physically remove the product from the market.
Wow.
Or injunctions that legally stop the company from making or selling the product.
So those are pretty big consequences.
They are. And in really serious cases, they can even pursue criminal charges.
Okay, so there's a whole range of options.
There is. But most companies really are trying to do things right.
Right.
They know it's in their best interest to work with the FDA and make sure their products are safe.
And it's not just about avoiding those penalties, right?
Right. It's about building a reputation for quality and reliability.
So it's a win-win.
It is. Compliance is an investment in the long-term success of the company and the safety of everyone who uses their products.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today.
We have.
We started with those raw materials and production processes.
Uh-huh.
Talked about documentation and traceability.
Yep.
And even got into the FDA's role in all of this.
It's been quite a journey.
It really has.
Yeah.
But I think the main takeaway is that this isn't just about paperwork and regulations.
Right.
It's about people.
Absolutely. It's about protecting consumers, fostering innovation, and ensuring the products we rely on meet the highest standards.
Well said. And on that note, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of FDA compliance for injection molding companies.
Been a pleasure.
We'll see you next time for another fascinating exploration of a topic that matters.